It's time to unite our hearts and heal our wounds of separation, to shift our collective consciousness from head to heart, from fear to love. Join evolutionary leader, healer, and spiritual mentor Sue DeMay and other heart-centered leaders for enlightening conversations and profound experiences of oneness.
Welcome, everybody, to the Living Oneness Gathering. I am your host, Sue DeMay. It's an honor to be here once again with you, uniting our hearts in love for each other and our planet, and shifting consciousness from head to heart, from fear to love, and being messengers in the world right now, beacons of light, and showing up in the way that we're meant to right now, the best way we can to support this global shift in consciousness and our evolution. So thank you all for being here. Those of you that are joining us live, I appreciate your presence. And those of you that have signed up and will be listening to the replay, remember that it's live in your time. In the moment that you're experiencing it, you can bring in the energy and be in that heart space and be in resonance with the message and what we're sharing today. So I'm really excited. I have a special guest joining me today. Daniel Schmidt is joining me from Ontario, Canada. He is the founder of a non-for-profit Awaken the World Initiative and the Samadhi Center in Ontario, Canada. He's the creator of award-winning films, Inner Worlds and Outer Worlds. The Samadhi series is one of my favorite series, and he's also the creator and speaker in the Awakened Mind series. And I know that the Samadhi series, I believe, has a part 4 coming, and I'm really excited about that. So welcome, Daniel. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's just jump right in with the big question, because a lot of people, I know you go into great detail and take it from so many different angles, which I really appreciated in your Samadhi series. But let's just jump right in and ask, in as the best way you can in this moment, or the best way you feel inspired to share, for you, what is Samadhi?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
a loaded question.
it is such a loaded question because, no one can tell you what Samadhi is, of course. It's, the questions and answers sort of live on the mental, physical plane. And, and it seems like what your show is about, the move from the head to the heart, there's another way of experiencing, another way of conveying who we are, being who we are. So this character, that is sort of wrapped up in this dualistic framework, that we become identified with the character when we wake up to our true nature, to who we are beyond name and form. Which, that's something that it can only be experienced directly. So direct is not via that conditioned mind. So when that happens, that's Samadhi. So Samadhi is awakening to our true nature and, that which remains when the mind and body drop off, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The words that are coming right now is just our connection to our true essence and not having the filters of that dualistic thinking and the filters of what's possible or what's not possible within our experience of the body, where we can just be with that essence and have that experience. And I love when you said, and you say this a lot in the Samadhi series as well, is it's such a unique experience. And we can, I do my best in the Living Oneness Gathering to kind of point people in different ways, because we can kind of get there in different ways. And for what's going to work for one person may not work for another. Mm-hmm. In your experience, I know you shared a lot in the way of the pathways that we can possibly take, but I'm just curious about your own personal experience. How did you kind of land in that experience of Samadhi for yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, maybe start out, I'll tell you a little bit about my initial experience with it, because I came into it as a complete beginner without any kind of seeking, or there was no expectation. I came into it just going to actually a Vipassana 10-day meditation retreat, and the mind body at that time was in a pathological condition. So I really just wanted to be at more peace, basically. I thought meditation could bring peace and or at least quiet the monkey mind. And so it was very unexpected. I followed the instructions. I was re working really hard at this retreat, focusing on concentration, equanimity, and all the usual meditation stuff. And there was a at that time emerging experience where it's like I became one with everything, and so like a Savakalpa Samadhi experience. So it wasn't an awakening, but it was enough. It was like a peak human experience. It blew my mind, literally, like out of my conditioned patterns. And in that experience, the seeker was born, because I lost the experience as well. So this is the key thing that I always like to reiterate in the films and in my meditation retreats, is that experiences are temporary. Experiences come and go, but the truth of who we are, the awareness, the knower of that experience, when we have an awakening, we recognize that that awareness is ever present. And so the sense of what I am, from that initial awakening, at that time I thought I was, the Dan character, but I was like Jesus or Buddha or something. So I was completely delusional at that time, because I still believed I was the character. But as we go on the path, we more and more come to understand that our true nature is the awareness that is ever present. And so when I realize that, the whole continuum of human experience is happening within this character, but awareness is ever present. So from that initial experience, I was desperate. The little Dan character was desperate to get that state back. And of course, the more the character learned, and learned about the teachings and techniques and all of that, the further the character got from that experience, because the character can't do it. The character can't awaken. We awaken from the character. So there was a long period after that initial samadhi experience that was a gradual failing of that character to awaken. And then eventually there, through a lot of continuous failure of that character, eventually there was a recognition of who I am, my true nature.
You talk about the character, or even the mind. It's not the mind that awakens. Like, we can't awaken the mind. We can't. We don't even. For me, I don't even experience my consciousness at the level of the mind. My awareness comes. It's like it's always running. It's like it's running in the background. It's like it's just part of the nature of who I am behind the ego character, or behind this persona we call Sue, or whatever it is in the world that we experience. But it's coming to realize that awareness behind everything that we believe up until that moment is who we are, right? So,
That's it. And so, when if the sense of who I am is with that awareness, then we see that all the preferences and the suffering, it's all within the character, But if we recognize awareness has no, qualities, it has no preferences, it just is aware, and it's like watching this whole show, the drama of life unfolding, and the comedy, the tragedy, all of it is happening within the world of form. And but if I know, that I'm, the awareness, and awareness is a tricky word because it's not simply the witness. There's a direct awakening of that awareness. So to me, it's what remains, even in deep sleep, when the mind and body drop off, there can be this continuity when that awareness is awake. So it's that which remains in waking, dreaming, and deep sleep, the one that doesn't come and go.
Right. Yeah. And that's, and that I find that for a lot of people to explain samadhi or explain oneness or explain the experience with a connection to our essence, our divinity, to use words is to kind of take away from it. But we have to meet the mind. We have to meet people in their humanness and give them a language or give them an understanding. We have to sometimes even teach it in a language of duality, so that the mind can open up to the understanding enough for it to let go for the experience to come through, and however that experience is for that individual. But
I think a talk like what we're doing right now, there if we're sort of talking, to people beyond their peopleness, so talking to the essence, sometimes there can be, something in, maybe the heart is a good word, something can land. And for me, it's, sometimes whatever it is that lands, it's like an energy that comes to life. Someone will sometimes, it's like lighting a little fire for awakening, and that can lead people to the investigation, to self-inquiry, to doing the sadhana that will create the conditions for a direct experience. So for me, I love to work with people. Like it's beautiful to have these conversations because I think it does kindle those sparks for people. But the real work, I love being down in the trenches with people at retreats, doing the sadhana, doing intensive meditation and self-inquiry, and to me, that's where we create the conditions for awakening. So, we can't make it happen, but we sort of create these conditions for the conditioned self to surrender or drop away.
go. Yeah, for the mind to let go, for the an opening. It's really, because like creating an opening in the mind. I always say a made-up mind is a closed mind. So it's like the more we can open our mind and release the idea that we let go of everything you think you know and everything you think you don't know about meditation, about oneness, about awakening, and create just a as wide an open mind as we can, then we can invite those experiences to come in. And I love what you were saying is like creating the conditioning around it. It's like creating the environment, creating the space. And everybody can do that individually. You can create a space in your home, you can create a space in even in your mind, in your awareness, and in your everyday moments, even going to the grocery store. I always say, when people say, well, how often do you meditate? And I'm like, I meditate 24/7. It's like I'm in a meditative state as much as possible. And when I forget, or when I'm find myself out of that meditative state, I forgive myself and I come back in, and I just do my best to stay in alignment with that way of being. So it's not about trying to do something. It's about how we are being while we're doing, how we are being in each moment in conversation or in silence, whatever it is. And so I always like to look at it like my life is one big meditation, like a constant meditation.
Beautiful. That's very, very well said. I think Yeah, for me, it's such a paradox with these retreats that we do, because people come to the retreat and they're it's like the character wants to awaken, right? And it's like, what do I do to make it happen? But it's not about doing. It's actually what you just described. It's a shift from that habitual doing. It's such a paradox, because this is the one thing we can't do. It's we come to the retreat and we're just being, essentially. We're just long periods of just being present, and somehow the mind body starts to change around this. There is a sort of rewiring that starts to happen if we're just being, and we sort of change our interface in a way, and then people get these glimpses of their true nature, and that's when it really lands for people, when they recognize, there is nothing to do. It's just recognizing the beingness that is already present. So then, it doesn't matter if you're on the cushion or in life. It's all watching whether the mind is mediating in that moment, if you're believing the next thought, or whether you're just present, fully directly experiencing life as it arises moment to moment.
Yeah, it's a beautiful practice. A lot of people believe or have this idea that awakening is like, okay, I'm gonna awaken and it'll all change. It'll be like a moment. And for some, it is. For few, for the few, it is. And maybe more and
Haven't
more
met many.
will have that experience.
Yeah.
But awakening for me and in my experience and for a lot of people, I believe, is very gradual. And we have these moments where it's just like a real eye-opening kind of experience, a real heart-opening experience, or a mind-blowing experience. But the process of awakening is often gradual. And people have a hard time with that because they're like you say, you want to get there, you want to do it, you want to make it happen, especially those that are used to being able to kind of make things happen or create things or do things or try and make something happen. It's a lot of a practice of surrender and just allowing and persistence, really.
Yeah, there's definitely many, many countless ways that it can unfold. The retreats that we do really create these conditions where they're sort of designed to bring about kensho, which is, it's more of a, like, when it happens for the first time, it's more of a dramatic flip. It is like a, and it's like waking up from a dream, and it's like, people will, there's usually very, very particular kensho sort of qualities where, people will feel like, I've been playing this character for the last 40 years or whatever, and now it's like, what was that all about? It's like I'm outside of the character. I'm awake, like waking up from a dream. And it can be, we've witnessed it so many times, and there's certain characteristics that are very clear in that. And it is, it's like one moment you believe you're the character, one moment you're awake. So it can happen like that, very quickly. And those are the more dramatic things. It's the person's energy, everything changes right in front of your eyes, which is, it's beautiful. And I, what excites me is creating the conditions for that to happen. But quite often, like the awakening, that sort of an awakening is, I always say, just the beginning of the path. It really, like, we what we because what can happen is, in that moment, someone awakens, but then the mind will come back, and quite often the mind will actually take ownership of that experience. So the mind will say, I did it, I awakened, right? And then it's like, I had an awakening, and like, who is that I that has now taken that ownership and appropriated it? So I think the deeper part of the path, and is actually really coming to question that I, you know, and it's the I thought that is at the root of that entanglement with the ego structure. So so that work, you know, that really begins once there's that glimpse and that knowing, and that work can, and it can flip on the other side as well. We can start doing that work, like observing the mind, you know, realizing that we're not the mind, looking at the preferences and the perceptions, all these different layers of the mind, and gradually realizing it to be empty of self. So it can happen in a big flip, but still that work has to happen, you know, or we do the work first, and then it's like bit by bit we come to that unveiling and stripping away of that illusion. So yeah, it can be, I've seen it in all different ways. And I think, like you said, nobody, you know, just, I've never met anybody who just awakens and it's like,
they're
that's
done.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that, you know, even the, you know, the big stories, like the great teachers like Ramana Maharshi, you know, he had that awakening when he was a child. He saw a dead body and lied down beside it and you know, had a complete awakening, but yet there were years and years of sadhana after that, you know, this ongoing purification of the self structure, which, you know, he was relentless, or something was relentless in him, to bring about that purification and that stabilizing in awareness. And so yeah, I don't think there's any being where, you know, it's just a flip and then it's like all good, I'm free, you know. It's like this self structure is you know, it's a work in progress. Yeah.
Yeah, I talk about how the ego evolves, and there's a stage of where the ego dissolves. But even in the dissolution of the ego, it's like it's always there in the background. You know, it's like it's ready, waiting for just a point of entry, right? A point of entry where maybe some fear comes in, or maybe some leftovers, kind of life bumps up into your leftovers, some deeper stuff that maybe you had been able to overcome for a period of time. But I always feel like, for me, it's like I always say, I do my best to stay in alignment. And I do that as close to 100% of the time as I can. But I'm always aware that the ego may come in. Like I talk about the ego being our teacher of fear and separation, and giving us an experience of separation. So it's always there in the background. And this classroom, this life classroom, is so convincing. There's so much programming and so much evidence to the contrary of what we know in our heart, that it's easy to get caught up in the convincing nature of what's happening in the world. So what are some practices that maybe you could share in this moment that would kind of bring people back, kind of snap them back to coming back home to the heart, or coming back home to that place within them that knows their true essence, or can connect to their true essence again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. So, yeah, so there are the practices like on the cushion, and, you know, meditation practices. But one of the life practices, you know, for me, it's really, you know, this whole path of awakening and the heart path, all of it is, it, you know, there's, it involves making what is unconscious conscious. So you know, bringing the light to the shadows, and for me, like the operations of the ego, the egoic mind, you know, there are these different sort of processes that are in play. And so for me, you know, you were describing, you know, being at the grocery store, and you know just always being present, or always meditating, or always inquiring, whatever we call this, to me, it's turning that light on the mind itself, you know, seeing what is in play. So, so I would say, some of the biggest ones are, you know, when the mind is evaluating, you know, so the mind, you know, the part of the mind, like in Buddhism, they talk about the samskaras, you know, the conditioned patterns that are running, and they're made up of preferences, and it's this mechanism of the mind that's always evaluating this is good, this is bad, I like this, I don't like that, and it's creating this binary sort of dualistic experience of the world. So it's like, you know, I like this politician, I don't like that politician, this is, you know, all of that, and it keeps the energy, you know, like the ego is really just made up of these patterns of resistance to what is. You know, it's just saying no of what is. So it's like, you know, I like this, I don't like that, and that is this polarity, this resistance in the world. And so we can start to do that, you know, in life, you know, just noticing, you know, if I'm present, you know, like Krishnamurti said, the highest intelligence is to be simply present without evaluating, without analyzing, without labeling as good or bad. And so for me, that, you know, is probably the number one thing is seeing, you know, when that mediating mind is active. And we can do that in day-to-day life, and we can do it on the cushion as well. Going into the somatic field, we do it in a slightly different way on the cushion, but you know, the little discomforts that come up in meditation, you know, trying to avoid our pain, you know, all of that. When we stop reacting and stop, you know, this endless cycle of craving pleasure and avoiding pain, then we can start to do a very deep rewiring within the self structure as well. So for me, those two dimensions, you know, taking it into the world and doing the same thing that we're doing on the cushion, but more directly within the framework of the body, you know, I would say those make the greatest difference. And that there are different sort of things as well as we progress on the path. You know, there's the perceptual part of the mind as well, the part of the mind that is sort of entangled with language and memory. So the part of the mind that's perceiving things in the world, you know, it creates the subject-object duality. You know, so we can start to make that conscious as well. And that's another discrete process that can actually drop away. We can sort of purify that process so that we're not constantly labeling and perceiving through the language filter as well. And again, that we can work with that on the cushion as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love when you're talking about you can experience it in life as you're walking around and you can experience on the cushion. It's like it's again, we're not trying to separate spirituality from life. It's like life is spirituality, spirituality is life. It's like everything is with every breath, it's you can be doing this practice. And that's what I do. It's my life is this is my life. It's like this is how how I'm being in my life. And that's how I feel like that's how I'm able and have been able to overcome so much of the programming that I've had is because I look at it as a 24/7, you know, commitment. It's not just, oh, I'm going to meditate for 10 minutes or I'm going to go to this yoga class and then go back into my life. It's like blend the two so that it can become more of a unified practice in your life.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
think that's the key for sure.
Yeah.
I think it's very common, like that, you know, sometimes these meditation retreats can be sort of an escape from life, and we might feel good and, you know, reach a state in there that it becomes almost like an addiction itself. You know, we start chasing bliss or chasing states, and I think that, like you said, the benefit of all of this is to make it integral, you know, so it's In meditation world, they talk about states and traits, so it's not about chasing the state. We want to actually grow the trait, or samadhi itself can be a state, but it can be a stage of development as well. So we want to, experience the states, of course. Like we want to wake up, experience that state, but allow the state to just come and go. And as we allow, it actually changes our wiring, and we can be more just open to whatever state is there. And the paradox is, the more open we are, the more close we are to that samadhi state in the moment, in the now.
And then the more open we are, the more aware or present we are to the fear or the separation or whatever else is keeping us from allowing us to experience that natural state of being in our essence. But yeah,
Exactly. Yeah, the
life is a
more
paradox.
that's the
It's
key is, the fear, all of these things that we see as hindrances really aren't hindrances. If we allow them to be exactly as they are, they're actually, the gateway in. Our pain, our resistance, our fear, whatever it is, if we allow it fully, then it is no longer resistance. Like, we don't resist our resistance. Like, the fear is a pattern of a resistance. So if we resist it, we just create more of that, more resistance. So the only way to untangle all of this is to let it be as it is.
I always feel like every moment we're either observing or judging. So the more we can be aware of that filter of judgment, the more we can be aware of how our resistance is playing out. And I and my in my experience, fear, the resistance is actually the gap between what the mind thinks and what the heart knows. So the I see resistance as a friend. Pointing to, hey, there's something here to look at. There's something like go within. There's a piece for you to heal or shine light on, or there that's where you're gripping, that's where you're holding, that's where the ego is trying to keep you stuck in the loop. So I use it as an entry point.
Yeah, that's it. That's beautiful. Yeah, that's it. You're not resisting your resistance. Yeah. Yeah.
One thing in the Samadhi series you said that really struck me, and I keep seeing this picture, and I don't know if you actually talked about sticky notes, but you talk about labeling the thought, labeling what's happening or what you're noticing, so you can create more awareness around it. So, oh, that's a thought of attachment, or that's fear, like just labeling things. So I saw these little sticky notes, and just see these sticky notes put on these thoughts or these. The ways that my mind was programmed at the time, and it really helped me become more aware moment to moment and make it a little lighter, right? Because I think a lot of people get into the spirituality and they want to awaken, and they're gripping it so tight, and it becomes so serious and so heavy, and then we get wound down into the intensity of it. So I like to make it light, playful. So the sticky notes was good because I had lots of colorful sticky notes if they showed up. So those kinds of little tools. What's
Yeah,
that?
little sparkles on
Yeah,
them.
exactly. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
that's
With
cool.
little stickers, good job. We did that one.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I think it's so important. To me, there can be a playfulness to it, and if there's a heaviness and a seriousness to it, it's probably, that's the ego trying to do something again. But yeah, I see it like in self-inquiry. Sometimes people come and they're so serious. It's like, I want to find out who I am. And there's this, like, there's on a mission to do it. And I've found, it's when people sort of relax that, and they can just sort of be here and play with the technique, play with the experience. Like, we usually do it in dyads, where we're speaking with a partner, and there's like a almost like a childlike energy that starts to come, and a playfulness that starts to come, and it's it's that I've found it's, when I start to see that, I think, okay, yeah, it's there, that's the direction, that's what we, because it like it's interesting, like when if you ask a little kid, tell me who you are, they don't give you, these great philosophical answers. I'm everything and nothing. I'm Purusha and Prakriti and all this stuff. They're just like, it's just me. It's just me. And then they laugh, and they're whatever. It's the energy that starts to become free. And it's, if we treat it as a goal for the mind or a question that has to be answered, then that again just keeps the energy on that mental and physical level. But when we have a don't know mind, the childlike mind is really a don't know mind. So the paradox is when people start to awaken, the mind actually has given up the knowing. It's given up, it's failed. It has to be confused, or a don't know dropped off mind. Or sometimes when people get tired as well, the mind's defenses are down. So it's like at these retreats, they're almost delirious, so the mind is kind of in this state. And that's when we can start to, truly know ourselves. But it's not a knowing on that mental level. It's a direct knowing.
Yeah, it's a deeper knowing. Yeah, the experience beyond the mind, really. Where the mind drops away enough to let allow us to have that direct experience.
That's really what the retreats are about. We put people in these ridiculous conditions, and it's so that the mind will drop, and then when they get that glimpse, then that whatever is freed in that moment, that energy, usually it's a pivotal turning point on the path, because whatever, up to that point, there was this doer, this seeker trying to make something happen. And so for me, that's the key, is recognizing that, the one that was trying to meditate, the one that was trying to achieve samadhi, was never, it was just mistaken identity. It was never me in the first place. So when we really get that directly, that's the turning point, and that's the beginning of true meditation. Then meditation is not a doing of anything. It's just being. It's just a recognition of who I am in the moment.
Yeah, I love that. When you were talking about the serious, I used to nickname myself Serious Sue, because as a child, I was so serious. But I'm also an empath, so I feel everything. I could feel everybody's pain and everybody's emotions, and the world was so serious and full of pain in my experience. So I became very serious. And so the longest time I just kept calling myself Serious Sue. I'm like, I gotta break that habit of being Serious Sue. And somewhere along the way, like this is what we're talking about for everybody who's listening. This is what we're talking about. It wasn't like I need to. There was a period of time I'm like, I gotta stop being so serious. I'm gonna be playful, and I was determined to be playful. But it wasn't naturally, joyfully. Like it wasn't a spark from within. It was like I'm going to. It was a decision I made in my mind. But that wasn't wrong. But that was the way I had to get to this place. And it's only now that I realize I've come full circle. When you said that, I'm like, oh, I don't feel Serious Sue anymore. I think she's like left the building. So it's like that moment where you realize, wow, something shifted, and I don't even know how or exactly when. That's that gradual unwinding and letting go, and all of a sudden we recognize. In some ways, we have an experience, and you're like, wait a minute, I would have normally responded or reacted this way, but I'm not. That's the miracle. It's like, wow, okay, something shifted around that, something healed around that, something let go. And I love those experiences, but I just had one just now, because I'm like, wait a minute, I think Serious Sue is totally gone. It's like, it's quite lovely.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, and it is such a paradox, as you said. Like it's like the mind that says, I'm not going to be serious anymore. It's almost like planning to be spontaneous. You know,
Yes.
it's ridiculous, right? It's like, okay, I'm going to be spontaneous.
Yeah.
No,
I
you
got this. I'm
can't
going
do
to plan this out. It's going to work out.
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
do you mind taking everybody through maybe a like 10-minute process and have whatever you feel guided to bring us through and
Sure.
give
Sure.
everybody an experience and see where we go?
Yeah,
Yeah.
sure. Okay. So, yeah, maybe yeah, so I'll just start by maybe we can just notice the body breathing. It's a good place to start. So, yeah, just take a moment to just notice whatever's happening in this moment. Whatever's actually showing up for you in this moment. So maybe you notice the breath. Notice the body. Body's position. And we're not making anything happen. So there's no, this isn't really a guided meditation. It's, I'm not guiding anything. So I'm just pointing to whatever is here in this moment. There's no need for doing anything, just recognizing the beingness or the I amness that is here in this moment. And this beingness that is here, it's the same beingness that's always been here. So as we were talking about that childlike nature, you know, when we were children, this beingness or this I amness was present. Just the sense that I am. There's this whole field of changing phenomena within the mind and body. In this field of change, changes through our life. So that little child body grows up. This I amness, it's the same I amness that will be there 20 years from now. Whatever is arising in the mind and body, just let it be exactly as it is. This I amness has no preferences. It just is. May be phenomena in the mind and body that is making itself known, be thoughts and sensations. Who is aware of that mind and body? Can you directly experience that I amness? Just notice if the mind is controlling or doing anything. Notice if the mind is manipulating this moment in any way, mediating. And we just want to notice. Is there any expectation in the mind or wanting of anything? And again, noticing the beingness that has no wanting. That just is. So we can continue to just be aware of this dimension of being. It's only the conditioned mind that requires something to do, feels it needs to do. This dimension of beingness is complete. It's here, always available. We rest in this open space, this open beingness. There's quite often a process that starts to unfold. Whatever is hidden in the unconscious mind can start to come up to the surface. So the old emotions, feelings, maybe even past experiences, whatever we hold in the mind and body, this space of beingness allows for all of it to come up. All of these incomplete experiences that have left impressions in the mind and body can come up to be experienced. And we just allow all of it. Sort of a burning up. So not reacting or having any preference to any phenomena that's coming up. The inner energies circulate freely if that's what it's doing. And we can continue to take this into our life. Just allowing everything to be as it is. As we move into life from this place of beingness, this place without preferences, without grasping. I won't end the meditation. We'll just let it continue.
Right. It was so wonderful to hear you go into that you didn't, I know you say it's not a guided meditation, but it's this guided voice you have. It's a voice that's guiding. And there was a period of time a couple years ago where I came across the Samadhi series, and I literally, if I would wake up, I would often wake up in the middle of the night. And I would do my meditation and have different things go on. And then I'm like, oh yeah, just put Daniel in my ears. And it just like sunk me back into sleep. And I'd wake up at some point going, oh yeah, I gotta take that out now. But I would often fall asleep or have these like deep, just dreamy meditations where I'm just really present and sinking into your voice and your words. So thank you. It's like a kind of an ocean floating in an ocean with your voice. It reminds me of that experience. So any kind of final words, anything you feel to share with people that would help people understand a little bit more about maybe what's happening in the world and what role they can play and how they can hold steady through this?
So what we just did there, I think for me, coming into just being, like to me, the whole path can be summed up by two words, just be, and you already are. So, it's just recognizing that beingness, and whatever flows from there, whether we're doing an intensive retreat, where we're purifying the samskaras and all of that, or we go into life and the matrix is doing its thing, especially now. There's a lot of activity in the outer world, in the field, and it's all the same process of when we can just be, then whatever unfolds, whatever is meant to happen, energy just seems to have its own intelligence, so I just trust that, whatever is meant to unfold. So it doesn't mean life will be easy, or always in this beautiful flow. It might be, if we go into such situations in life with that open heart, or that just beingness, without the ego engaged, all kinds of stuff, crazy stuff can happen. Quite often does happen, it could be quite disarming for whatever patterns are in play in the world. So it's not easy, not easy work, when we feel our little ego wanting to react and wanting to engage, or evaluating something that's happening, and it's like, this shouldn't be happening. When we see that and we can just allow and just be, it's like in our self-inquiry technique that we do in the dyads. The technique works when one partner is just purely witnessing, just purely allowing, without any evaluation of what's happening, staying in a don't know mind. Because the truth is, what is happening in the outer world, we don't know. The mind likes to think, this is good, this is bad, but when we let that go, we can move from an experience of the outer world that is based on, good and bad, duality, evaluation, to experiencing, to direct experiencing. And for me, that's where the depth of life is in directly experiencing whatever it is that comes into our field.
It's where the juiciness and the miracles really reside as we open up when we open up to that. Beautiful. Thank you for being here and thank you for sharing your heart and thank you for being of service to humanity and for following and really answering your deepest heart's calling. I can feel it and I appreciate you being in this world. Your presence is very healing and
Thank you. And thank you for what you're doing and for creating this space here. It's beautiful. Thank
Thank
you.
you. Thank you, everybody, for being here, for honoring the needs of humanity right now, and your own needs as well. It's like, this is for you. This is a heart scrub for yourself. This is a reminder for you to come back to that space within you that can connect to your divine essence, and your presence is appreciated. I see you. I honor you. I thank you. I appreciate you. Until next time, love and blessings.
Thank you for participating in our Living Oneness Initiative to unite our hearts in love for each other, our planet, and all of creation. If you would like to join us for a live gathering, you can RSVP at heartledliving.com/gathering.